ददौ कुर्वन् गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू अभगवीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। नाउ वी आर गोइंग टू गो टू द लास्ट पार्ट ऑफ द नाइन्थ चैप्टर। इन दिस चैप्टर बेसिकली कृष्णा फर्स्ट टॉक्स अबाउट हिज ग्लोरी इन टर्म्स ऑफ हाउ ही इज द कंट्रोलर ऑफ द मटेरियल वर्ल्ड and then he moves on to focusing on pure devotional service, kevala bhakti, and he talks about different people, how they understand him differently and what are the consequences of those different kinds of understandings. And then Krishna talks about primarily pure devotional service. That's what we'll discuss in this section, 29 to 34. But before that, let's have a quick overview of the thoughts that are going on in this verse, in the previous section, and how they are leading up to the glorification of Kevala Bhakti. So from 20 to 24, what was happening? First 20 said, demigod worshippers also worship me. That was the point. Trayvedya mama somapaha puta papa yagya irishtva. So yagya irishtva mama, they are worshipping me only. But demigod worshippers, DGW demigod worshippers, fall down and lose whatever they have gained. That's the next verse. So they are worshipping Krishna only, but because they are worshipping indirectly. So that point will come explicitly more later. Then 22nd verse says, those who worship me undistractedly never lose anything. And then the question may come up that if the demigod worshippers are also worshipping Krishna, then why the difference between what demigod worshippers get and what Krishna, what the pure devotees get? Why this difference between demigod worshippers when demigod worshippers are also worshipping you? That question is answered here. 23rd word, demigod worship me but in an authorized way, unauthorized way. So what exactly is that which is unauthorized? They don't know me as the supreme yagya bhokta and prabhu. And then that means depending on what people's conceptions are, they will get the results. So different worshippers get different destinations. So here Krishna is slowly but surely taking points ahead and establishing the primacy of pure devotional service. Now, we will see that with respect to demigod worship, we will see that Srila Prabhupada, in general within ISKCON, did not encourage demigod worship. Even Rupa Goswami says that a bhakta can do Ganesh Puja, when Prabhupada translated that in his Nectar of Devotion also. But when a devotee asked whether we should do Ganesh Puja, Prabhupada said that yes. Prabhupada gave him, if every month you give me a huge amount, something Prabhupada said. The point was that Prabhupada did not want that sort of contamination to come in. So if we look over the centuries, we'll see different conceptions or different attitudes towards demigod worship. So let's look at it and let's try to understand the context. So in the Mahabharata, we will see that Draupada worships Shiva, Arjuna worships Devi. You know, when does Draupada worship Shiva? Actually, there are many occasions when Draupadi and Drishadumna as his son and daughter, a daughter and son, Draupada worships Shiva. And actually Arjuna doesn't exactly worship in terms of me accepting them as the Supreme Lord, but he also worships the Devatas to get weapons from them. He does tapasya to please Shiva. Then just before the Kurukshetra war starts, then Krishna tells the Arjuna that, you know, you should take the blessings of Devi, because she is the goddess in charge of material nature, and with her blessings you will attain success. So Arjuna gets off his chariot and prays to Devi. And then when he prays to Devi, what happens? Devi appears and he says, your victory is guaranteed because Keshava is with you. Wherever he is, there will be victory, because he is the lord of the goddess of fortune. So now, why is this kind of demigod worship talked about in the scriptures? It's not that demigod worship is sinful or it is wrong. The point is, every book has a particular focus. So the focus of the Mahabharata is primarily Karma Kanda, although it also talks about pure devotional service, but that is not its focus. Largely it focuses on talking about not bhakti but Karma Kanda. And of course, the Lord and His devotees, their pure reciprocation is also there within it. But that's not the overall tone of the book. So therefore, in Karmakanda, worship of the demigods is talked about, and that's why it's included in the Mahabharata. Now, if you move on from 5,000 years ago to around 1,000 years ago, what do we see? We see Ramanujacharya. In Ramanujacharya's times, he considered that it's unchastity to worship the devatas. So, for example, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the story based on one of the biographies of Ramanujacharya, that one night Ramanujacharya slept, and you know, it's a long story, but basically what happened was that he was in Puri and he did not like the fact that the dresses of Jagannath, the starch had not been removed from them. So then he pointed it out to the pujaris, but Lord Jagannath did not like this. His worshippers being, his pandas being just being criticized like this. So in his sleep only Lord Jagannath gave him a sort of blow. And when Ramanujacharya woke up, he found himself not in Puri but in some other place. And he found himself in a temple, and he thought that the temple is a Shiva temple and it's a Shivalinga. Thinking that, how did I get there? He started fasting. He said, no, how did I end up in a Shivalinga? But later on he found it was Kurma temple and it was Kurma Kshetra. But the point is, the idea which the many Ramanujites have today is also that just as a wife will serve her husband and not other people, not other men. Similarly, a worshipper should serve only the Supreme Lord and not other devatas. So Ramanujacharya discouraged it. What about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? When you see, look at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said it's okay. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would travel around, he would actually take, he would even go to Shiva temples. For example, when he went to Puri, he went to the Bhuvaneshwar temple, and there he danced in front of Lord Shiva. And in Murari Gupta's book Chaitanya Charita, there is the description of Shivashtakam which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had composed. And in the Shivashtakam, Lord Chaitanya glorifies Lord Shiva as a great Vaishnava, as among the greatest Vaishnavas. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's attitude was, yes, there's nothing wrong in worshipping the devatas if one understands that they are devotees. Now, there are other pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, where when people were having incorrect understandings and they were doing improper worship, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu strongly disapproved it. So, for example, when there was a Brahmin Gopal Chapal who tried to frame Srivast Thakur as if Srivast Thakur had been worshipping the goddess, and he had the paraphernalia assembled. Often the paraphernalia was centered around black magic and things like that, tamasic paraphernalia for her worship. So when that was placed in front of the door of Srivast Thakur, and Gopal Chapal tried to frame Srivast Thakur like that, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very displeased, and Gopal Chapal actually got leprosy, and for as a consequence for his offences. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, forgave him when he begged forgiveness, but after he had to suffer for it, suffer for the consequences of that misdeed. So the point is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he focused on pure devotional service, but he did not reject the Vedic culture that was there. He integrated that Vedic culture into a devotional context, into the proper devotional understanding. So it's not that we consider devatas to be competitors to the Supreme Lord. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, they have the conception that we are monotheistic, whereas Hindus are polytheistic. So we Hindus worship only one God, we Christians worship only one God. And even Islam is also aggressively monotheistic. So, but they consider the Hindus to be polytheistic. Actually, the way the Vedic culture is not polytheistic. The Vedic culture is monotheistic, but there is multi-level monotheism. Multi-level monotheism means there's one absolute truth who manifests at different levels and in different ways and allows people to worship accordingly. Monotheism means there's one God. Polytheism means there are many gods. So the word God, especially in the plural gods, it is when it is used in the Vedic context and when it is used in the context of the other religions, have different meanings. For example, if we look at the history described in the Old Testament, or even what is described in the Quran, or in the associated literature along these religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, whenever the ruling religious head would conquer a kingdom, you know, the first thing that they would do is that they would go, for example, when Muhammad conquered Mecca, after he came from Medina and conquered Mecca, the first thing that he did was he bashed up, he destroyed all the idols that were being worshipped over there. So the idea was all false gods have to be rejected and destroyed so that the glory of the true God can be established. So their idea is that there is only one true God and all other gods are false gods. What is the idea of false God? False God means they are imaginary and they are actually temptations, they are actually manifestations of the devil. The devil wants to distract people away from God, and these false gods are manifestations of the devil. They are created by the arrangement of the devil to distract people away from the true God. So by destroying those false gods, we help in establishing the glory of the true God. So the Vedic culture doesn't talk about false gods and true gods. It talks about God and demigods. Prabhupada used the word demigods for the word devata. So God means the supreme being. Demi, the prefix demi is like the prefix semi. It means partial, like we have circle and semicircle. So God and demigod. So demigod means those beings who have the partial powers of God, not the full power. So there is one supreme being and the demigods have, they are more powerful than us, but they don't have as much power as the supreme being. So in today's context, the philosophical understanding is very unclear of people, and people think that okay, all gods are same, all gods are manifesting the same Brahman, and people do not understand this complex and accommodating system of multi-level monotheism. So in order to avoid confusion, Srila Prabhupada said that at least within the Krishna consciousness movement, those who are serious devotees should not worship any of the other devatas. They should focus on worship of Krishna. And that is what the Bhagavad Gita is ultimately teaching. That is what the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita ultimately teach. So we will see that the devatas, the understanding is that they are the devotees of the Lord, and if somebody is very attached to worshipping them, then one can worship them with the understanding that they are the devotees. But in general, for those who are serious sadhakas, sathaiva sarvaharhanam achyutejya, if one worships Lord Krishna, Achyuta, then there is, by worshipping him, and everyone else is worshipped. There is no need to worship anyone else. That's the understanding. So, let's move forward. Now, we'll look at one more point over here, that we're now going a little deeper into demigod worship. There are this concept of proper nouns and common nouns. So Shiva, for example, is both a proper noun referring to the person Shiva and a common noun referring to the quality of auspiciousness. So what does it refer to over here? That, you know, the point which I'm raising over here is that sometimes in Vishnu Sahasranam, Shiva is also the name that is used to refer to Vishnu. Sarva Sharva Shiva Sthanur Bhutadhir Nidhiravaya. So Shiva is also used to refer to Vishnu. So why is it like that? What does it imply actually? So actually Shiva can refer to a particular person, or Shiva can refer to a particular quality, and whoever has that quality can also be called as Shiva. So when it is referring to a particular person, it will be called as a proper noun. When it is referring to the quality, then whoever has that quality can also be referred to as Lord Shiva, as Shiva. So let's look at this point clearly. As a common noun, Shiva can refer to the quality of Vishnu, who is Sarvanamavan. Sarvanamavan means all names ultimately refer to Vishnu. That's how in Vishnu Sahasranam we find the name Vishnu. Not only the name Vishnu, but also find the name Shiva. So if Shiva is chanted as a proper noun, it will take us to Shiva Loka. Why? If chanted as a proper noun means ultimately Yanti Deva Vrata Devan. So depending on whom we remember, that is what we will attain. So if we worship Shiva, because when we are chanting the names of Shiva, and if you are thinking of Lord Shiva, the specific person who holds a Trishul in his hand as a snake around his head, so if you are referring to that particular person, then naturally we are referring to that person, we will go to that person's abode. So if Shiva is chanted as a proper noun, Om Namah Shivaya, for example, then with a particular conception of a particular deity in mind, then one will go to the abode of that particular deity. But if one is primarily chanting the names of Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna, and within that one chants the name of Lord Shiva, so if Shiva is chanted as a common noun referring to Vishnu's qualities, then it is a part of Bhakti Yoga that will take us back to Godhead. So Shiva is chanted as a proper common noun. So this is a little technical concept, the concept of proper noun and common noun. But the point of this is that we have to understand that names have implications, and we have to understand those implications properly. So let's look at this. There are names and there are conceptions. So now when there is right name and right conception, that means one chants the names of Krishna and one has the right name and right conception. Once I understand Krishna is the Supreme Lord, then one will go back to Godhead. So then, on the other hand, if one has right chants the right name but has the wrong conception, this is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita Antilila. There was this person, Ramdas Vishwas, who seemed to be a great devotee of Lord Ram. And he was constantly chanting the names of Lord Ram. But while chanting the names of Lord Ram, he was having the conception that one day I will become Ram. So he was with Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met both of them, Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Ramdas Vishwas were traveling together. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu paid no attention to Ramdas Vishwas. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later revealed his inner mentality, which had earned the disapproval of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that is, so such name, such a chanting of the names, which is with the wrong conception, that will not lead to the desired result. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the chanting of the holy name of the Mayavadis is Pratibhimba Namabhas. Pratibhimba Namabhas means Namabhas is like the rising of the sun. But Pratibhimba Namabhas means the sun is rising and we see the sunrise in the reflection. And we can't get much warmth from it. And further, if we have wrong name but right conception, so it will lead to spiritual advancement. Wrong name means if there are non-Vedic names in vernacular languages. So for example, we have the name say Allah or Yahweh, Jehovah. So these are the names of God. Now we may not find them in any Vishnu Sahasranam or any list like that. But that doesn't mean that those chanting of those names won't purify. Because ultimately chanting of the names of God is meant to help us remember God. And we remember God through His personal characteristics based on His pastimes. And we also remember God based on His generic characteristics as the Supreme Being. So when we remember the Lord based on His generic characteristics, that also leads to purification. That is what is being talked about over here. So when somebody chants the wrong name, so it's not actually a wrong name, because one is having the conception correct, and this is the Supreme Being that we are referring to. So if we look at the conception of the Absolute Truth that is mentioned in the Bible, so the One Supreme Being, the broad generic characteristics are similar to what are talked about as the characteristics of the Absolute Truth. So in that sense, it will also lead to spiritual advancement. That's why Prabhupada would say that any bona fide name of God, if one chants, one will become purified by that. And then on the other hand, if one chants the wrong name with the wrong conception, then we have 9.12, it is said, Moghasha Moha Karmano Moghyana Vichitasa. So what does this refer to, wrong name, wrong conception? Actually, nowadays there are many self-proclaimed gods, people who claim to be God, and their worship, their followers, sometimes they may have thousands of followers and millions of followers, and their worshippers worship them as if they are God only. And there are, even for these people, people have made Sahasranam or Shatanam. So you can have so and so Baba Shatanam, so and so Baba Sahasranam. Now when people chant those names, actually that particular person is not God. So that person is not God, and that person's name is not God's name. And that person is, so that means there is a wrong name that is being referred to, if that person's name is being chanted. And it's chanted with a wrong conception. So wrong name and wrong conception cannot lead to the right result. So Mogha ultimately will lead to futility. So we are trying to understand here, what are the different ways in which avidhipurvakam can happen. So there are many ways in which it can happen. So let us look at the various ways in which people can understand demigod worship. So what are the possible conceptions of demigod worship? So one is that the demigod is the Absolute Truth. that there is no difference between the demigod and the Supreme Lord. So, istu rudra indradi daivatam. So there's a verse in the Purana which says that actually samatvena iva vikshet sapashandi bhavedruha. So if one considers the devatas to be equal to Lord Vishnu, such a person is a pashandi. And such a person, the conception is completely rejected as wrong. Now, then the popular Hindu idea today, Hindu karma kandi idea is what? Demigod is one among many gods with no one as supreme. That is a Hindu karma kandi idea. Which is also false, because there has to be one supreme ultimately. It's not that all these gods are constantly and eternally fighting. Then there is demigod is a symbol of Brahman. That is what is talked about in Pruthaktvena Bahudha. That means there is an impersonal absolute truth, and from that absolute truth, people can ascribe names and forms for the sake of concept, for the sake of what the Mayavadis call as convenient fiction, as a conceptual meditational tool. So you can ascribe whichever form you like, and you can worship that form as your Ishtadevat, and ultimately you will go beyond that form. So that is of course a complex misconception, but the essential point is here, if they are not offensive to the Supreme Lord, then that's not Mayavad. If they are offensive to the Supreme Lord, it becomes Mayavad. And then if they see that demigod is a representative and devotee of Krishna, then that is included within the realm of devotional service itself. The gopis worship Katyayani so that they can get the get her blessings, by which they hope to get the Lord as their husband, or Krishna as their husband. So actually, when the gopis worship Katyayani, we may wonder, the gopis are considered to be topmost devotees and they know no one but Krishna. Then why would they worship Katyayani? The idea is that when a devotee is so intensely desirous of the Lord, Lord's mercy, Lord's association, then the devotee adopts any and every measure possible to gain the Lord's association. So the gopis, they are living in a particular culture where they are women in a society and they cannot just directly approach Krishna. At the same time, they want to attain Krishna. So within their cultural context, how they demonstrate their intense desire? By doing the Katyayani Vrata. So now Anandavan Champu by Kavi Karanapur describes that actually the gopis who did this Katyayani Vrata, the Radharani was not among them. Radharani was a worshipper of Lord Shiva. She worshipped Lord Shiva. Padma Bandhu Radhika, the Radhika Ashtakam says. So these were Padma and other Sakhis who were unmarried, and they worship Katyayani, and then eventually Krishna went and fulfilled the desires towards the end of the Vrata when he took away their garments and then returned them. So actually that is not a dushana, that is a bhushana. It's not a contamination, it's a ornament. Why? Because actually it demonstrates the intensity, the desperation, the absolute single-mindedness of their desire to attain the Lord and their willingness to adopt any and every measure to gain the Lord. So that is indicated by their worship of the devatas, like the worship of the gopi worship of Katyayani. So now this is not considered at all a contamination, and that's how. So now Vishwanath Chakravarti makes a very interesting point about demigod worship. So he raises this question that actually everybody is worshipping Krishna, so does all the worship go to Krishna? He says yes, all worship goes to Krishna, but all worshippers don't go to Krishna. What is the difference between worship and worshippers? So he says that just as when water is offered into a river, the water itself will go to the ocean, but that does not mean that the worshipper goes to the ocean. The person who offers the water goes to the ocean. So there is that there is that Subhashita which says that Akashat Patitam Toyam Thasagaram Gachati Sarvadeva Namaskaram Achyutam Parichakshat. It's actually, it reaches Achyuta. So what they say is that just as a drop of water falls from the ocean, from the sky, it ultimately reaches the ocean. Similarly, whichever Devata one worships, ultimately that reaches Lord Keshavam Pratigachati. Keshavam Pratigachati, it goes to Keshava. So actually, this verse now it's at a level of Karma Kanda, and it's essentially not inaccurate, but it's not completely accurate, and it's interpreted in a way that is definitely not accurate. It's not mean to say that actually all worship is the same level. Yes, all worship will ultimately reach Keshava, but will the worshippers reach Keshava? No, because the worshippers will go where their conceptions are based and where their aspirations are driving them. So if somebody is worshipping Shiva, that person cannot go to that. If somebody is worshipping Durga or somebody is worshipping Indra, that person cannot go to Vishnu. And that is clearly brought about in 9.25. So there, actually speaking, so 9.25a, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan, those who worship the Devatas, they go to the Devatas. That is talking about worship in the mode of goodness. Then Pitranyanti Pitravrataha, those who worship the Pitras go to the Pitra. That is talking more about, more or less about those in passion. Bhutani Anti Bhutaija. So those who worship the ghosts and praise, that is tamasic worship, they will go according to that destination. And the deep part of that verse is Yanti Madhya Jinopi Mam. Those who worship me will return to me. Now let's look at, this is a little technical point now. We'll go back to 9.27 to understand what is happening here. So 9.27 was that whatever a person, whatever you do, yat karoshi yad ashnasi yat juhosi dadasi yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat kurushva madarpanam. So now at this point we have completed our discussion on demigod worship, and now we are looking at various levels of worship of Krishna, various levels of devotional service. So here Krishna is, what is he telling? That whatever you do, you offer it to me. So Vishnacharya Thakur explains in his commentary that what is the level of this bhakti? He says it is karma jnana mishra pradhani bhuta bhakti. So it's a technical name, but we can try to understand, not very complicated. So remember, we discussed pradhani bhuta. Pradhani bhuta means the material component is more than bhakti. So karma jnana mishra pradhani bhuta bhakti. So let's look at it. So he says, why does he put it in this particular category? He explains several reasons for that. So it is not sakam bhakti, because there are no material desires. Yat karoshi dasnasi ajjuhosi, that verse does not talk about any material desires that are to be fulfilled by that worship. So it's not sakam. And it is not karma yoga. He explains why, because all activities are offered, not just the scripturally prescribed ones. What does this mean? It means that all activities are offered. So actually, in Karma Yoga, the focus is on offering the prescribed activities, not all activities. Whereas in Bhakti Yoga, one offers all activities. Whatever one does, one tries to offer to the Supreme Lord. And it is not Jnana Yoga, he explains further, because abundant appreciation of the Lord's personal features is present. It is not Jnana Yoga. In Jnana Yoga, one focuses more on the impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth and not the personal conception. So when adequate appreciation of the Lord's personal feature is present, then that is Jnana Yoga. That is not Jnana Yoga. And then it is not Kevala Bhakti, because the actions are offered after performance, not before performance. So what does it mean? Actually, if you look at the progression of this verse, yat karoshi dashnasi yat juhosi dadasi yat, that whatever one is doing, That means one is doing various things, tat kurushva. So after doing the activity, tat kurushva, offer it to the Lord. So a higher level is that first one offers to the Lord and then does the activities. What does it mean, first and after? Is it a matter just of timing? No, it's not a matter just of timing. It's a matter of also of attachment, of understanding. So if one is attached to the Supreme Lord, then one thinks first, okay, what will please the Lord, and one will want to do that. On the other hand, if one is not all that attached to the Lord, then one is attached to what one wants to do. So one will do what one wants to do and then offer that to the Lord. So it is not, okay, in Kevala Bhakti, one is attached to the Lord and wants to do whatever will please the Lord. So therefore this is not Kevala Bhakti, and it is at one level lower. So Prabhupada quotes from the Bhagavatam here, 7.5.24, that Itipum, not Prabhupada, sorry, Vishwanath Thakur quotes over here, Itipum Sarpita Vishnu Bhaktischena Navalakshana. This is the second part of the verse, famous verse, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. So that first part of the verse is what we normally quote, and that describes the nine limbs of bhakti. So after describing those nine limbs, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam Archunam Vandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmanivedanam, after describing them, then Iti Pumsar Pita Vishnu, Iti, these activities, Pumsar Pita Vishnu, when they are offered to Vishnu, Bhaktischena Navalakshana, they are characterized as bhakti. So all these activities are directly connected with the Lord, and they are done for the pleasure of the Lord. So Vishwanath Thakur gives often quite a bit of a technical classification in his verses, and he emphasizes through all these that actually ultimately it is the Supreme Lord who is to be worshipped, no one else. So we discussed this of earlier. There is Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti. So Pradhani Bhuta means mixture of bhakti and other processes with bhakti greater than 20%. So if it is karma mishra pradhani bhuta bhakti, means mixture of bhakti and other person bhakti greater than 20%, other part is karma. So pradhani bhuta means bhakti more than 20%, whatever else might be there. So karma mishra pradhani bhuta means karma will be the remaining component. Karma jnana mishra would mean that karma and jnana both are there as components. So now let's look at the overall flow of this chapter and try to understand how this chapter is describing the most confidential knowledge, how it is talking about the glories of bhakti in five distinct ways. We have discussed three of them till now, and we will discuss the remaining two now after this. So in terms of destination, yoga kshemam vahamyaham, that is 9.22, let's talk about it. Alone gives the highest eternal destination. Other forms of worship do not give eternal destination. In terms of possession means what one owns. It doesn't need fancy material assets. It doesn't need anything very fanciful. Patram pushpam phalam toyam. And then devotional qualification, actually yatkaroshi dashnashi and shubhashubha phalairevam, that indicates that it can be performed even by those who are not pure hearted. And then with respect to deviation, can redeem even if the performer sins. This is referring to occasional or incidental faults. This is Apichet Sudaracharo and Kshipram Bhavati Dharmatma, which we'll discuss now. And then in terms of material qualification, it can elevate, it can uplift higher than what karma can't elevate those who are not qualified even for karma marga. So that means it removes the inherent faults of the people also. So we'll discuss these two points once again, what this means. The next verse will say that even those who are low born can become elevated. So before we move on to that now, about the various ways in which bhakti can elevate, let's look at what Krishna is telling now in the verses with build up to that. So first he says in 9.29, Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dveshosti napriyah ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham. Samoham sarvabhuteshu, that Actually, samoham, I am equal to all living beings. Mame dveshosti napriyaha, that I am not jealous or envious of anyone, nor is anyone specifically dear to me. But after describing this, Krishna says in the next part, ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya, those who worship me, what happens to them? Maite teshu chapyaham, they are in me and I am in them. They are in me and I am in them. It's a very endearing declaration of a very intimate connection by the Lord. Maite, they are in me. Teshu chapyaham, and I am in them. So the Lord, generally speaking, he in the Bhagavad Gita doesn't talk about endearments like this too frequently. So when he talks about it, it's significant. So he's telling that he is actually impartial. That's what he tells in the first two parts, first lines. A and B. Samoham sarva bhuteshu name veshyosti napriyaha. And it's impartial. And after that he says, no, I'm partial. Ye bhajanti tu maam bhaktya, those who worship me, maite teshu chapyaham, they are in me and I am in them. That means we are very intimately connected. So this sort of description may seem contradictory, but it's not contradictory. It depends on which level of the manifestation the Lord is being talked about. So samoham sarva bhuteshu, this is referring to the Lord as a judge. So as a judge, a person is not partial. Naturally, whatever a person is destined to get, whatever is entitled to get based on one's actions, that person gets and the judge gives accordingly. So the judge is not partial. Shamoham sarvabhuteshu. But then ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya, but those who worship me, what happens to them? Krishna says I am partial. So that is the second, the D, C and D parts of this verse are referring to the Bhagavan aspect. And the Bhagavan aspect is a very intimate aspect. It's a very elevated and exalted manifestation of the Absolute Truth. And the Bhagavan aspect, what does he focus on? He focuses on the principle of pure devotional service. And wherever he sees that, the Bhagavan aspect embraces that person. So Krishna is impartially partial. Now, how is that possible? Isn't that oxymoron? Oxymoron means contradictory words brought together. So how can somebody be impartially partial? So what it means essentially is that actually Krishna is partial. Definitely he is partial to his devotees. Prabhupada says that a charitable person may be charitable to all people, but then is naturally more affectionate to his own children. That is not considered a fault. Similarly, it is not considered a fault that the Lord loves his devotees who are like his own children as compared to all other living beings who are also existing in the existence. Now, actually all living beings are his children, but some are his obedient and loving children and some others are his defiant and even hateful children. So the Lord offers his care to everyone, but the intimacy of the relationship is not possible for everyone. So the Lord, that is possible for those who try to reconnect with God. So Krishna is impartially partial means that he is impartial in terms of opening the doors for everyone to receive the benefits of his partiality. I'll repeat what I mean is how is Krishna impartially partial? He is impartial in opening the doors to everyone for receiving and benefiting from his partiality. So the point is that the Lord cares for everyone and he especially cares for those who love him. So that's why this verse is a glimpse into the heart of the Lord. After describing in this verse, so Prabhupada explains in the purport that the Lord is a living entity, eternally glitter, and when a living entity becomes inclined to the service of the Lord, he looks like gold. The Lord is a diamond, and so this combination is very nice. So just as a diamond in a gold diamond in a say, jewel necklace, or rather gold in a gold along with a diamond will look very nice. Similarly, the devotee and the Lord look very nice. And Prabhupada says that without the principle of reciprocation, there is no personal philosophy possible. So yes, there is a Lord and there is a devotee. So the Krishna, is he partial or is he impartial? One way to understand it is that he is impartially partial. He is partial to his devotees, but he allows everyone to become his devotees. And in that sense, he is impartially partial because he is allowing everyone and everyone to become his devotees. And beyond that, he is also reciprocal. Krishna is specifically neither partial nor impartial. He is reciprocal. Reciprocal means he allows those who wish to worship him accordingly. And in whichever manifestation they want to worship him. So, now Prabhupada here quotes Sridhar Swami, here quotes Chakravarti Pad's purport. So, the example is often given that the Lord is like a desire tree. And whatever one wants from this desire tree, the Lord supplies. So, Sridhar Swami gives the example of the Lord being like a desire tree. The desire tree gives us whatever we want. But then in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary says this, yeah, this example is good for talk about the reciprocal nature of the Lord in terms of fulfilling our desires. But he says, the Lord is not just a desire fulfiller, the Lord is also a relationship builder. The Lord is actually a person who cares for those who come to him. So he says that if a person is going to a desire tree and asking for something, that person may get it. But the desire tree doesn't become attached to that person. A desire tree doesn't strive to protect that person on one's own accord. A desire tree doesn't become the enemy of the person's enemy. But the Lord does all this. Now the Pandavas, they were devotees, they were attached to him and the Lord also became attached to him. And then when the Pandavas are in danger, the Lord becomes their ally. Not just ally, he becomes their subordinate, he becomes their charioteer. So in that sense, the Lord is much more than a desire tree. God doesn't just give what we desire, the Lord gives much, much more. And what is that much, much more? The Lord gives us the ultimate blessings by creating circumstances which enable us to develop love for Him. So now, after describing this, Prabhupada points out that in the conclusion that devotional service to the Lord is not an activity of this material world. It is a part of the spiritual world where eternity, bliss and knowledge predominate. That means this is a transcendental activity. This is a part of the spiritual world, and to the extent we situate ourselves in this activity, to the extent we also become situated in the spiritual world. Now after describing this, then Krishna will talk about this extraordinary verse. Chet Sudra Charo Bhajite Maman and Nibhak Sadhure Vasamantavya Samyak Devasito Hisaha. So Apichet Sudra Charo, that even if somebody does Durachar, Achar is action, Durachar is bad action, Sudracharo is extremely bad action. So what happens? Bhajite Maman and Nibhak, if while doing some sinful activity, if that person continues to worship me determinedly, bhajate imam ananya bhak, what happens? Sadhureva samantavyaha, such a person is considered to be a sadhu. And samyag vyavasito hi saha, samyag vyavasito, such a person's determination is well situated. So this seems to be quite a mysterious verse. Why mysterious? Because first of all, normally we would consider somebody as a sadhu to never do durachar. Somebody is a sadhu, the word sadhu means good. So the idea of sadhu is a person whose behavior is very good. Sadhu will never be a durachari. And we will normally say that if somebody is durachari, that person is not a sadhu. But Krishna is saying, even if a person is a terrible sadhu, sorry, in terms of terrible durachari, sudurachara, still that person is considered to be a sadhu. So normally we would consider such a person not to be sadhu, but asadhu. Asadhu means not at all saintly, not good. Asadhuti vram. నైతన్ మనస్తవ కథాసు వికుంఠనాథ సంప్రియేత దురేత దుష్టమసాధు తీవ్రం కామాతురం హర్ష శోక భయైషణార్థం తస్మిన్ గతం తవ గతిం విమృశ్యామి దీనః. సో ఇట్స్ డిస్క్రైబ్ దట్ అసాధు తీవ్రం, ద మైండ్ ఇస్ unsaintly, anti-saintly, and tivram, it is very strong. So normally we would consider that a person who is doing sudraachari is not at all a devotee, is not at all sadhu. But Krishna is saying, even if such a person is sudraachari, that person should be considered to be sadhureva samantave, should be considered to be sadhu. And bhajate mam ananya bhak, such a person, if a person is worshipping me undeviatingly. Now we wonder, actually, if that person is himself going through a difficult situation in terms of battling with the conditionings and succumbing to the conditionings because of which one is doing Dudruachar, and the question comes along, how would such a person be able to do Ananya Bhag Bhakti? So somebody is falling away, somebody is doing Sudurachar, that means that person is falling away from the path of Bhakti, somebody is falling away from the path of Bhakti, and that person is Durachari, the person is Durachari, then that person, how can that person be Ananya Bhag? So, actually, different acharyas resolve this in different ways. The standard resolution following Shridhar Swami is that the Ananya Bhak primarily refers to no other object of worship. That means that person may not necessarily be acting pure devotional service in terms of unbreakable devotional service. It's not that the person is 24 hours practicing devotional service, but the Ananya Bhak here refers to that the person doesn't deviate from the path of bhakti and doesn't seem to doubt that actually This is the absolute truth. That it is Lord Krishna is the absolute truth. That person accepts that. But one thing is, one is just not able to maintain steady worship of that absolute truth. So such a person should be considered a sadhu, Krishna says. So that means that person stays fixed in the worship of Krishna or in any of other manifestations like Vishnu, Ram and others. And while staying fixed in that worship, that person may not be able to follow the requisite standards for practice. So either way, the emphasis of this verse is what? That considers such a person to be sadhu. Now let's look at the implications. The implications of this verse are quite interesting. And there are the whole range of explanations. There is a conservative explanation and then there is a liberal explanation. The accommodating explanation. Let's look at all of them. So Jiva Goswami essentially says that this is a rhetorical statement. So, rhetorical statement means so as I mentioned, Shridhar Swami mentioned that Ananya Bhag means doesn't go to any other deity, and similarly the devotee doesn't go to any other process. That it means the devotee doesn't think, oh, while I was trying Bhakti Yoga, I fell away from my principles, so therefore Bhakti Yoga doesn't work, I have to practice some other yoga. The devotee doesn't think like that, the devotee is fixed. And then, Jiva Goswami says that this is a hypothetical glorification to highlight a particular glory. What is the particular glory? That is that, so even if a person falls away, that means that apichet sudaracharo, that even if that happens, I am ready. So the point of this statement is not that it should happen. I don't want it to happen. And I want her to be ready. Sorry, I want the Lord. Actually, the point here is that the devotee, when he is trying to worship the Lord, at that time the devotee is continuously and clearly fixed on the worship of the Lord. And the devotee never falls away. But in terms of leaving the worship of the Lord. So Jiva Goswami is saying it's hypothetical glorification. The essential point of the verse is that actually it's to make a point that the process of devotion is so great that even if a person commits a grievous wrongdoing, still that person remains saintly. So it's a hypothetical glorification, just like there is the verse Naham Vasami Vaikunthe Yoginam Hrida Yeshua Narada. So, yeah, the Lord is saying, I don't reside in the Vaikuntha, I don't reside in the heart of the devotees. I reside where my Lord where my glories are being praised by my devotees. What does this mean? Simply means that actually the Lord is indeed present in Vaikuntha, the Lord is indeed present in the heart of the yogis, but that Lord who is not accessible in those places, that Lord becomes accessible through the in the places where the Lord is being glorified, where talks are being given, where kirtans are being sung, where meditation, mantra meditation is being done. At that time places the Lord becomes accessible. So the point of this verse is that it's hypothetical. Now there is a whole philosophy, school of philosophy called as antinomianism. Antinomianism is there are certain Christian branches which were antinomianist. That means their idea is that because Jesus has died for our sins, because of that, now we are free from all sins. So we don't have any obligation to follow any moral principles, because Jesus has all, whatever sins we might commit, actually Jesus has through his own blood paid for all those sins also. So there is no way in which this kind of philosophy can be accepted in the devotional path. Now, actually, the devotion can ultimately free one, aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami. But that will happen when one does mahamekam sharanam vraja and one does sarvadharma antarityajya. So when we surrender everything else, all the conceptions of living, and focus on the conception of living of parabhakti, centered around love for Krishna and love for all his children, then Krishna frees us from our sinful reactions. So this doesn't mean that Krishna allows us to continue our sinful actions for all time to come. No, a serious devotee has to practice the regulative principles, and by practicing the regulative principles has to give up sinful activities. So if the devotee is not able to give sinful activity, then that devotee is not considered a very advanced devotee, Prabhupada explains in the purport. So the Krishna conscious philosophy is definitely not antinomian. It does not justify any kind of wrongdoing just because it is being done by a Krishna devotee. Even devotees also have to follow traffic rules. Devotees also have to follow the laws of the state. Devotees also have to follow other things, other principles which may be given in the scriptures. So Prabhupada, when he was asked, how are my devotee disciples known? He did not say they are always chanting Hare Krishna, they are wearing tilak, they are wearing dhoti kurta. He said they are perfect gentlemen. Perfect gentlemen means that they are actually having exemplary character. So certainly if somebody is just casually and nonchalantly breaking rules, because one is a devotee, breaking moral codes, breaking legal rules, such a person will not be considered at all a serious devotee. And that kind of misusage is very unfortunate. So that shouldn't happen. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was there in Bengal. At that time many Gaudiya Vaishnavas had this antinomian type of idea that now, if because the Holy Name is so powerful, if we chant Hare Krishna, then whatever wrongdoing we do, it doesn't matter. And so at that time, many Bengalis, if you came from the market, you would see that the Bengalis would come, in one hand, on the forehead with tilak, in one hand will be weed bag, other hand will be machi, fishes, fish. So they would want to eat the fish. So now, actually speaking, that is not at all compatible with the principles of those who are aspiring for pure devotional service. So their idea was that because we are coast dwellers, we have to eat meat and eat. And therefore, we will eat meat and you can avoid meat if you want. So Prabhupada was ready for that attitude. And he responded to that by saying that actually focus on the principle of compassion. That actually the principle of compassion means that how can we kill other children of God and expect and claim to love God. So devotion does not free one from moral responsibility. One has to be morally responsible also. Now, let's now look at another commentary of this verse. The somewhat rasic commentary. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as I mentioned, has written two commentaries. Gita Bhushan is commentary on the book Gita Bhushan, which is the commentary of Gaudiya Vidyabhushan Bhagavad Gita. On Gita Bhushan, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written a sub-commentary that is called as Vidvat Ranjan. And Vishwanath Thakur's commentary is called Sararth Varshini. And on that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written a commentary called Rasik Ranjan. So, what is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explanation of this verse? So, he explains that it's talking about three levels. That somebody is doing Sudurachara. And if somebody is doing Sudurachara, that is actually a very low level. And somebody is doing Bhajitema Mananya Bhag. So, if we could talk about, you know, we could talk about Akarma, Karma and Vikarma. So, Apechet Sudurachara, one is doing Sudurachara, that is the person who is doing Vikarma. And Bhajitema Mananya Bhag, one is doing actually one point of devotion, that is the person who is doing Karma. So, in third line is saying, Sadhureva Samanya, second line itself says, Bhajitema Apechet Sudurachara, Bhajite Mamananya Bhag, Sadhureva Samanta. Such persons should be considered sadhus. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes this in the next verse. So, let's look at the next verse before we can understand his commentary properly. Kshipram Bhavati Dharmatma Shashvat Chantim Nigachati Kaunteya Pratijani Name Bhakta Pranashati. This was it. Kshipram Bhavati Parma Dharmatma. Which person? Kshipram. Kshipram means quickly. Becomes Dharma Atma. It becomes a religious person. Righteous. Shashvat Chantim Nigachati. Which person will quickly attain peace. And then, Kaunteya Pratijanihi. O Arjuna, declare, Name Bhakta Pranashyati. My devotee will never perish. So, let's focus on the first part of this. Kaunteya Pratijanihi. O Arjuna, sorry, no, the first part is Kshipram Bhavati Dharmatma. Shashvachantam Nigachati. So, soon, Kshipram is quickly. Such a person will quickly become Dharmatma. And then we'll attain lasting peace, Shashvat Chantim. So now Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that Apichet Sudurachara is at the level of Akarma. Then Bhajitema Mananya Bhag, Apichet Sudurachara is at the level of Vikarma. Bhajitema Mananya Bhag is at the level of Akarma, that is transcendental. Vikarma is sinful activity. And then Bhavati Dharmatma. Bhavati Dharmatma means such a person become dharmic, that is actually at the level of Karma. It's positive activity. It's not necessarily pure devotional service. So it's saying that what does this verse actually mean? That even if one does vikarma, but if that person is practicing apakarma unbreakingly, then that person will become a dharmatma, which just doesn't make any sense. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a very sweet esoteric explanation of this. He says that actually this verse is referring to the gopis of Vrindavan. How is that? He says, in the eyes of the world, Apichet Sudurachara, when they left home, they left their families in the middle of the night to respond to the call of Krishna. At that time, what are the gopis doing? The gopis, from the worldly point of view, Sudurachara, for a woman to leave her husband or her family in the middle of the night to go and see some other man. That is Sudurachara, that is a terrible activity. So when one does this kind of Sudurachara, Apichet Sudurachara, so from the world's point of view, it is Sudurachara. But from the point of view, pure devotional service, actually it is Ananya Bhag Bhajite. Krishna is declaring that they were actually doing pure devotional service. Bhajite Imam Ananya Bhag. How? Actually the gopis, through their going to Krishna and hearing this call of his flute, it represents the supremacy of their surrender. When we surrender to God, one is that we give up the bad for the sake of God. We give up sinful activities. But for the sake of God, we need to give up the good also. Even the good of this world should be given up. Now for a woman, her chastity is considered to be extremely precious. In many ways, as precious as her life, if not more. So, a woman is meant to guard her chastity. And the scriptures do talk about that. They talk about and the consequences when the Kauravas try to violate the modesty of Draupadi. What are the consequences? The whole Kurukshetra war resulted and the whole Kuruvamsha was destroyed. So the chastity is considered a very prized position for a woman. But for the sake of Krishna, they were ready to give even up, even that up. So that is actually such an exalted level of devotion. Of course, the gopis never became unchaste, because Krishna is the parampati, patim patinam param parastad. He is the supreme pati. So they were actually supremely chaste. But in the world's eyes, they were sudracharo. So although they are sudracharo, actually they were ananya bhavaktas. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that those who understand this truth and those who consider sadhureva samantavya, those who consider that actually gopis are sadhus, what they have done is not bad, that is done is very good. When you understand the gopis are sadhus, for them, therefore, what happens? Such people become dharmatma, kshipram bhavati dharmatma. Such people soon become dharmic and they become elevated by the practice of dharma. This is a sweet explanation of this particular verse, and we will discuss the next part of this verse, Kaunteya Pratijaninam Vibhakta Pranashati, in our next class, where we will conclude the 9th chapter. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.